Welcome to the Kingdom Roots podcast with Scott McKnight and Cody Matchett. Conversations designed to look at how the kingdom took root then and how it's taking root now.
Hey, Kingdom Roots listeners, Cody Matchett coming to you from Calgary, Alberta, Canada. On today's episode, Scott and I discuss our hiatus, why we've taken a bit of a break from releasing some podcasts, where we've been and what we've been doing. In relation to that, we talk about Scott's departure from Northern Seminary, where he'll be teaching in the upcoming days, writing projects that we've both been working on and research that we've been doing. And then we end the podcast by talking about what's to come with Kingdom Roots this year and with this significant transition. So that being said, hope you enjoy the episode. Hey, Scott, how are you?
Okay, Cody, good to see you. I hope snowshoes are off now up there in Canada.
We're experiencing, I think, fifth winter now, to be honest with you. We had some good temperatures. We got up to, 17 degrees Celsius, and now we have snow again today. I'm looking out my window, and I'm watching snow fall. How about you?
Yeah. Well, we've had rain the last couple of days, probably 3 days in a row, 4 days in a row. It's been cold, a little bit of snow, but nothing sticking. But we had spring in March, in February, and now we're getting winter in April. So
yeah, it seems like it won't end for us either, but Jubilee is on the horizon, no doubt. Well, it's been a while since we've been here together.
Yes.
It's great to be back. We've been on a bit of a hiatus. Maybe some of our listeners might wonder if we're gone forever, but there's been some changes with the Kingdom Roots podcast. All good changes, of course, and some advancements and developments. And some of those relate to some things that have shifted and changed in your life since we last talked, Scott. So I'm just curious, what's been going on for you? What are you up to now? What's changed, the heart of why things have shifted here and for you with Kingdom Roots?
Well, we're taking over, you and I are taking over Kingdom Roots. It will be independent of Northern, where it was hosted for a while or connected for a while. And Northern was very cooperative and said, yeah, this is your podcast, take it.
Absolutely.
So we're going to be able to do this together, and we will ramp up some of what we're doing, make some changes. But right now, what I'm doing is I'm reading theses at Northern, both master's level, some, and D-Min level, quite a bit. I seem to get one or two submissions a week.
Wow.
And D-Min students, because they're mostly pastors, really struggle with deadlines because they don't have the kind of time that...
I'm sure the pastors listening are deeply sympathetic to that right now.
Oh, they're totally sympathetic. And I try to be as sympathetic as possible and stretch out the deadline. And I don't tell the truth on when they're due because I know they won't meet that date. So then they actually get another month. So that's one thing I'm doing. I'm going to be teaching a course in June on, it's called Thesis Design, but we're going to do a seminar on the Apostle Peter in the New Testament.
Okay.
And then my last course that I will teach in fulfillment of my contract with Northern is I will go on a tour with our D-Min students to Turkey and Greece in September. But then following that, I will be, and I made this announcement on Twitter the other day, I will be teaching in the D-Min program at Houston Theological Seminary, and they kindly sent me some merch the other day.
T-shirt. Okay, some
swag. Looks like the Houston Astros a little bit. I thought, okay, well, that's pretty cool. When I first thought, I thought it was an Astros shirt, and I went, okay.
You can't wear that because you're a Guardians fan, so you're not allowed to wear an Astros shirt.
That's right. So I'm going to be teaching in the D-Min program with Lynn Coick. It's a different kind of D-Min program. And that'll be a lot of fun, and I'll get to supervise thesis students again. And then a year after this September, I will begin teaching one course a year in England for the Westminster Theological Center for the seminary that Lucy Pepiot is the principal of. And so I'll be teaching 2 to 3 courses a year for the immediate future. We'll see how long before
I like that. I know your socials have quite the reach, but I also know that maybe some of our listeners didn't see the news or don't know about the news, but you resigned from Northern Seminary. Not retired, but resigned from Northern Seminary. And that's right. with the intention of continuing to teach and write and do the work that you've been doing. And so if people want to find you to take classes with you or to study with you, they won't find you at Northern anymore, but they'll find you doing work with Houston and now in the UK with Lucy. That's right?
Yes. I mean, I'm still available on my standard social media and my Gmail account. And I will be available for Northern until, I don't know how they do things when someone leaves. I don't know how long the email lasts, but probably a while. So I can be reached in the same way. Yeah, I did resign early January. I announced that this would be my last year teaching at the seminary. And but I resigned not to retire. Even though some people have said that I retired, I have not retired. I am cutting back, but I was going to cut back to the same number of courses anyway.
Correct.
And I'm just going to continue to teach with less commitment in some ways to an institution where, you know, I won't be going to faculty meetings and, you know, other types of obligations that seminary professors have. So That's the plan for right now. I'm really glad to get to join my friend Lynn Kowick at Houston. I like their program. It's broader than the program at Northern. I really like the Northern program too. And I'm really looking forward to going to England because the course will be taught in Nottingham University where I did my PhD.
There you go.
So I'm going to get to go teach in England for a week.
When was the last time you were at Nottingham? Has it been a while for you?
1986, probably. Wow. February, March.
Before I was born.
For my oral defense. Now, maybe it was, I'm not quite sure when I defended, but I think it was February, March in 1986.
And you haven't you haven't taught there since, haven't been back there since at all?
No. And we've been to England probably four or five times since then, but we've always... You know, we go to the Cotswolds, you know, because we like it. We go to Oxford. We haven't even been to Cambridge since I studied there in 82 and 83. So we're looking forward to doing that. And we're going to take in a little bit of golf as well.
Of course. For those who don't know, you're actually a pretty good golfer, so I've been told. Is this true?
Well, it depends who's doing it. But, you know, I'm 70 years old. I'm 70 years old now, so things don't work quite as well. But I had some pretty good rounds last summer. Nice. So I'm looking forward to playing a little bit more golf this summer.
Yeah, I like that a lot. Yeah, so I guess for our listeners then, that's just helpful information in terms of a transition with Kingdom Roots. We'll keep going. We'll be putting out the same type of content we've been putting out in the past. And maybe many of the listeners don't even know that previous to this moment, the podcast was hosted through Northern Seminary, but with your resignation and now move to doing, you know, sort of other independent teaching, and you'll continue to write as you've written. Now you and I will carry forward with the Kingdom Roots podcast independently. So for our listeners, not much changes, but for us, lots has changed. But I think our listeners will be interested to see that might have some music changes, some stylistic changes, some graphic changes, all of those things coming in the near future. So that's exciting. I'm wondering then, maybe take a few more minutes together, what have you been working on then in the last little bit?
Well, we want to find out a little bit about you as well. But, all right, I've got a big project I'm working on right now. And I just have to find time to do it. I'm calling it The Conflict in Galilee. And it's sort of... it's a book about Jesus and the Pharisees in the context of how, let's say, strategic field theory is the sociological model I'm using, how it works out the relationship between Jesus and the Pharisees and the scribes and the temple authorities as the incumbents, and Jesus, in a sense, as an insurgent. And he's in a, you know, he's rebellious at some level and attracting crowds and everything like this. So, but it's at the same time, it's a bit of a public life of Jesus. It's a bit of a teachings of Jesus. Hmm. It's a bit about the strategy of Jesus in the context of conflict and in the context of strategic field theory. So that's a big project, and I've been working on it for a couple of years. The publisher wanted it, an editor, I should say. I haven't signed a contract. Wanted it last December, and I said, no, I don't have a chance. And then I thought maybe I'd get it done by March, but I haven't even really worked on it since last fall. And it's at 80,000 words right now, and I was hoping it would be 60,000 words. So I don't know what I'm going to have to mess with it, but I'm.
Let me interject right for now, a moment for the non writers who listen to this podcast, Scott. I mean, 80,000 okay. words sounds like a lot of words, and it is. But you know, it is funny to think about. I think you had mentioned offline that it was at one point up to 130,000 words, or somewhere up there, and now back down to 80,000. And so these things fluctuate quite a bit in terms of writing and editing.
Well, it got up to 80 or 90, and then I cut it back to 65, and now I messed around with it and it's at 80, and I've got a lot of notes to myself, which means those are all at least 500, if not 1,000 words. And I'm stuck right now in purity concerns.
Mm-hmm.
I've been reading a lot about Jesus in purity, and, I'm trying to put this together, but I need about a week of where I can take all that I have gathered and put it together in a reasonable way. Hmm. But like an 60,000 word book would be about 200 pages.
Yeah.
Of nice font and decent space between lines. 80,000 is going to be 275 pages, so it's a little bit longer. And I'd like to get it to 60 because I want to make it an accessible Jesus book. But certain things have to be explained, so I'll see where we get there. But that's not what I've been writing. I'm writing right now on the Everyday Bible Study. Now, Everyday Bible Study, 16 volumes. I'm working on Matthew.
Okay.
And that's the Matthew, then Ephesians, Colossians, then 1st, 2nd, 3rd John, and the editors left Hebrews till the end. I'm not sure I'm ready to get to Hebrews anyway. But so I'm working on Matthew right now. 1 Corinthians is coming out soon.
Yep.
2 Corinthians is with Becky Castle Miller to write questions.
Great.
And so also is 1 and 2 Peter and Jude. They're all done. So I'm working on Matthew right now. So
I like it.
I'm way ahead.
Yeah, our audience probably knows. I mean, to most of our audience, you know, Scott, they know you as a prolific writer on sort of all areas of Bible and New Testament. But the heartbeat of your introduction or your home base when it comes to New Testament studies has been Jesus and the Gospels, and in particular Matthew. Writing on Matthew right now, do you feel like it's a little bit like pushing a boulder down a hill after, you know, reading and writing on Matthew for 40 years?
Maybe pushing a boulder up the hill.
Yeah. Okay.
Here's the
good.
Problem.
Yeah.
All right. Now look, the books, apart from the text of Matthew, are supposed to be 40,000 words. So that would make it about. It's how many words in Matthew? I can tell you, 1,000.
28.
1,000 verses. 1,000 verses. I don't know how many words. Okay. So, it's going to be. It's going to be a thicker one like John and Acts and Luke. But my word count on the passages right now is exceeding. And if I keep this up, it's going to be 60,000, 70,000 words, and that's too much. Mm. But it is so fun to work on Matthew.
Oh, there you go.
And I did Matthew 5, 21 through 48 this morning. I'm supposed to only do that a little over 1,000 words. I won't tell you how many words I wrote, but I'm going to have to cut back on some other passages. So I'm doing Matthew on that. And I have sort of a funny thing that's happened. A student of mine she wrote her master's thesis. She's a trauma therapist and a New Testament student. She wrote her master's thesis on trauma theory and the New Testament. And it was really good. And her name is Adrian Gibson. And I said, Adrian, we need to write a book together. So we start working on this book together. She's got children and she's got things to do. She's a therapist, so she doesn't have every day of the week to work on writing. So she's written a couple, like 1,500 word essays that are just really good and explain what trauma is, what secondary trauma is, the history of trauma studies, which is really fascinating because it started with war. It was only acknowledging in World War II that people had been traumatized by war, that trauma studies really took off. Well, when this first started, when Adrian and I first started working on this, and it's going to take a while to finish, I was doing 2 Corinthians. And as I was reading 2 Corinthians 10 through 13 in the Everyday Bible Study, I said, Paul has been traumatized.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, so, and I think this explains his attitude, his anger, his edginess, and it's a difficult passage, those four chapters at the end of 2 Corinthians. Besides the debate, is this the severe letter, which really should be a fair discussion. But for a lot of people, no, you can't do that sort of thing. 2 Corinthians 10 through 13 has a very difficult Greek because there's so much clipped expression. He starts and stops and gets going. But it's fun Greek to read too. But I thought I need to just sort of explore for this project with Adrian Paul as a traumatized apostle. Well, the next thing I know, I had a publisher interested in this, but they wanted it at 9,000 words. So I wrote it up and it was 20,000 words. So I thought, I can't cut it back, didn't I? So I told them I can't do it the way they wanted it. So now it's at about 28,000 words. It will be a short book. But in a sense, it is also a book about pastors being traumatized by congregations. So it's the other story in church conflict, where my daughter, Laura Berenger, and I have written two books in a church called Tove and the book called Pivot about how to deal with bad cultures that actually traumatize people in the church and, problems in the church. This book has turned it around and asked how congregations and congregants traumatize pastors, and they do. And this is a part of, and when I kept looking at this through 2 Corinthians 10 through 13, I thought, I got something to say here.
Yeah.
And it's interesting. So I wrote it up and I sent it to an editor. I said, he's a friend of mine. I said, just take a look at this. He goes, oh, this is good. And he said, has anyone else done this? Well, I found one person who has actually said that Paul was suffering from PTSD. And it's a seminary professor. He's deceased now. Seminary professor who also was a therapist and a chaplain who would have seen lots of traumatized people. And he explores some things pretty well. And then the other one that I thought was very helpful was a book on sarcasm in Paul, especially in Corinthians. And in that, this author several times makes the observation that Paul is sort of, I don't know if he ever uses the word traumatized, but it gets really close. You can see that this author will say, that's a way of explaining it. So I've got that going. So Matthew,
we had a correspondence about this recently where you sent me the work on the traumatized apostle. And a couple of things stood out to me. One, I said back to you, I wish I could just accidentally write 20,000 words. I wish I could just fall into writing a book. I don't yet have the Scott McKnight gift, but I'm willing to receive it if you're willing to impart it. And I also thought when I started reading it, exactly as you described, I thought, man, the work that you and Laura have done with a church called Tove and now Pivot has been so important. But being in pastoral ministry myself and having lots of friends in pastoral ministry, a book from this angle of Paul as a traumatized apostle and the ways in which those whom he's aiming to nurture into Christoformity and those whom he's aiming to pastor that he's been, you know, betrayed or traumatized or hurt by then, I think that will be really helpful for pastors and for readers.
Well, thanks. I'm encouraged. And Cody, I've sent this to about a dozen pastors, and every one of them has said, wow, we need this book.
Yeah, I agree.
And I don't want the book to be used by pastors to say, see, we've been treated bad too. So
of
leave
course.
Us alone. Now that I'm afraid that people could justify that, but lay people can do the same thing with Tove. They can say, see, this is our explanation because you've given us language. So I hope it becomes a fair discussion about what happens sometimes to pastors in churches. But yeah. I've met very few pastors other than, let's say, the super pastors who can stay out of the conflicts. You know, they can stay above it and someone else will take all the heat, who haven't gone through some really hard periods with people in the church.
Yeah.
And, you know, it applies to more than pastors. It applies to professors. It applies to seminary administrators. It applies to a lot of people who experience criticism that just never stops. Mm-hmm. And they have to take the heat. So, and I, you know, the way I feel about it, Cody, is that, you know, if I were to criticize the seminary president or pastor, I think I would feel that I know that this could be painful for the person, but sometimes the criticisms are important to utter.
Sure.
And pain needs to be there. It's not quite the same as trauma, but it could become traumatizing.
Yeah, for sure.
And I'm just really waiting for one or two more stories I've solicited to come in, and then I'm going to make a proposal to the publisher for it.
Wow. So Jesus in Galilee, Matthew, and the traumatized apostle. You got your hands full.
I'm full. I'm right now. My afternoons are consumed with reading theses, and I'd like to hear where you are in your theses. I had a student the other day calling this a thesis, a theses. Okay, that's got a kind of a Greek pronunciation, theses.
I like it.
So. How are you doing with your work and where are you on your work?
Yeah, thanks for asking. It's going well. For those of you who maybe heard the episode or might remember, my work right now is kind of on, when you read 1 Timothy chapter 3 and you see those lists for overseers and deacons or overseers and assistants, sometimes bishops and deacons, most scholars will say these relate to character in some way, shape, or form. In fact, I have found in the secondary literature, almost without fail, every single scholar that mentions 1 Timothy 3 will mention that it relates to character. And the kind of gap is nobody really defines what they mean by character or defends terminology, nor do they try to situate character in the Greco-Roman world or the Hellenistic Jewish world that this letter emerges from. And so my work with, you know, Theophrastus moving forward has been to kind of examine character in the ancient world. And so I'm finished my first chapter, well, at least a draft of my first chapter. I'm close to 20,000 words, kind of laying out all of these things, the sort of issues and problems and what's gone on in scholarship before me. And then I actually have my confirmation of candidature was supposed to be this last month, but got bumped to May. So in May, I will be reviewed on a revised version of my research by an external examiner. And then from that point, I'll become a PhD candidate. So that's all going well, actually. I've been learning lots, diving deep into not only Theophrastus, but as you know, Scott, there's just so much secondary literature that's written on biblical texts, and to try to wrap my mind around what's important in the secondary literature and kind of wade through it has been good fun for me. So that's where I've been at in my schoolwork, my PhD work. And then at the ministry school that I teach at, I teach Bible and theology at a ministry school here in the city. I'm teaching Matthew for the first time in my life. And that has been lots and lots of fun to work through Matthew with about 75 students, mostly young adults. And so it's been really great to do that with them. So it's
Where are you? What are you almost done with Matthew?
Yeah, we're in 23 to we just did 23 to 25, and so we'll do 26 and 27 together this next week, and then we'll do 28 and a wrap up the following week. So yeah, we're getting close to finish now.
Very good. Mm-hmm. Matthew's a wonderful book. It's long though, isn't it?
It is very long. Book. It's tough. There's a lot in there, as you well know, to try to tackle. And so we've tried to spend most of our time in the teaching discourses and then kind of piece together the narrative pieces around those teaching discourses, which has been lots of fun. That's where I'm at.
There's a new commentary on Matthew by Mark Allen Powell.
Oh yeah.
Have you seen it?
I haven't.
Do you know? Okay. Mark is my age or close to it. And he was a student of Jack Dean Kingsbury.
Okay.
And Kingsbury famously argued that Matthew is broken into three big bits, 1:1 to 4:17, 4:17 to 16:21 or something like that. Mm-hmm. And then 16:21 to the end. And all based upon these, from that point on, Jesus began to. That's sort of the outline for it. Well, I don't see anybody doing that today so much, you know, that using that outline. So when I'm reading Mark Allen Powell, I feel like I'm back in the 1970s and 80s, in the early 80s, when I was working on Matthew, and this was such a big deal, the Jack Kingsbury's Matthew Structure, Christology, and Kingdom book. Was so influential, and his students, like Dorothy Jean Weaver and Mark Allen Powell and David Bauer, had a huge influence in the Matthew seminar. Mm-hmm. So I'm having fun reading it, but I'm also feeling like I didn't know this stuff was still alive in Matthew's
set,
because I've taught it so many times on the basis of narrative discourse exchanges,
of course,
alternation in Matthew, and I think that's how it's actually organized. But I've also, he asks questions that I remember being asked, you know, what's the most important title for Jesus in the Gospel of Matthew? So I'm having fun reading that. And I'm reading Rodney Reeves again, because that's the, go ahead.
I was going to say, with teachers and students, how much do you think, so, you know, for me, I did a lot of undergraduate work with a great professor here in a province over from me in Saskatchewan called Wesley G. Olmsted, just a great scholar on the Book of Matthew, did his PhD with Graham Stanton. And it's fun to work through Matthew and to find myself maybe re-saying things that I've heard Wes say find myself wondering if maybe for the first time in my life I disagree with Wes, and that being a bit of an out-of-body experience, because he's just such a good scholar that I don't know if I could ever truly disagree with him. Do you find that for you with Jimmy, or with a lot of students who will re-narrate things based on their teachers and because their teachers had such influence on them?
Yeah. And you know where, you know, totally. I totally agree with you. And Wes Olmsted was a student of mine too.
Yeah, I know.
And outstanding guy. What I find interesting is that, let's just say, since I've been at Northern Seminary, I focused on Paul for quite a bit, because I had never really taught Paul. So I had to put all my thoughts together. I would read Paul, of course, the letters in the Testament, and teach a little bit here and there and read stuff. I found when I went back to Matthew in the Gospels, I was seeing different things. And I was thinking, now, do I disagree with what I used to think, or have I just expanded what I used to think? And Jimmy Dunn's three big books on the New Testament, or in one of them is post-New Testament, they shaped me. And the new stuff by Tom Wright, and the new stuff by Dale Allison, and the new stuff on the memory, social memory theory people. All this stuff is now very influential. So I'm finding old ideas that I have to sort of push to the side or minimize, diminish in their importance, and new ideas bubbling over. So it's been a lot of fun. It is one of the most interesting experiences. If you're not old enough to do this yet, but if you divide your academic career into decades, when you enter a new decade, you will, about every 10 years, you look back and you think, boy, I've really grown a lot. And now I'm thinking differently about some things, and how will that impact me? It's like I was telling Michael Gorman the other day, if I was a New Testament student today, coming up. I would be a participationist theologian of Paul because I really like what Mike Gorman's doing. But yeah. I told him, I'm too old. I'm not going back and redoing all that work that I've done from the new perspective. So I'm just staying put. And
I love it.
I could be minimized a little bit. But I do see things now from an old angle with new eyes.
Huh.
And I think that's what you'll see. You'll see that you're saying, oh, this is what I learned from Wes, but now I have a slightly different way of saying the same thing, but it's different
mm-hmm.
and the same.
Yeah, I found, I can't imagine what that experience will be like. I found that in this last year alone of being a PhD student for a year, I look back a year ago and feel like, the friends have asked, you know, how's it going with the PhD work? And I'm like, I feel like even a year ago, I don't know that I knew how to read these texts. And that's not true, but you have that feeling of
so
like,
true.
I'm seeing so much, I'm experiencing so much that I wasn't seeing and experiencing before. The angles, the depths, the more you both read secondary literature, but also get into primary literature in more intensive ways. I can't imagine
so
a decade
true.
From now what that'll be like, but it's been a great experience.
That's so, so true.
Yeah. Well, Scott, it's been great to reconnect and to chat about
yes.
our future. As we end then, let's talk about maybe some of where we're going for our listeners to know maybe who's coming up and the guests we'll be having on in the weeks and months to come. Do you want to share some of those?
Well, I don't have the list right here in front of me, but you do, I'm sure.
I can pull it up. Yeah, we will have Nick Elder on, who had a great book come out recently called Gospel Media. And so...
Yep.
We'll talk to him about gospel media. We have Jason Staples coming on. We'll talk about his book, Paul and the Resurrection of Israel. We'll have Lynn Kohick on to talk about much of her work that she's been doing. We'll have Lucy Pepiat on in the weeks to come. We'll also have Beth Allison Barr on and many others. So we'll be doing more interviews. We'll talk to scholars about the work that they're doing. We'll interview them on books. And then periodically, you and I will jump on and talk about what you're working on or I'm working on or what we're thinking about. And it's going to be great. So we're looking forward to bi-weekly releases here with Kingdom Roots in the weeks and months to come. And I'm excited for all that.
And I'm intrigued by the music that you'll get. We won't have any more country twang.
No more country twang.
Yeah, that was from Chaz way back when it started. And I told Chaz, I said, I don't know how this kind of music works, but okay, we'll just start with this.
Yeah, sure.
Well, I had no idea that we'd be doing the podcast. What is it, 5, 6, 7 years later, 8 years later. And
so we get
some new music and maybe some new graphics and a fresh new approach where it's Kingdom Roots Redivivus. Come back alive.
I love it. Well, Scott, thanks for your time. I know listeners appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you.
I always love connecting with you, and I'll look forward to chatting to you and everybody else next time. Thanks.